Brought to you by 1111 Systems, this is the Cloud Bytes podcast, where we bring together panels of opinionated cloud customers, providers, and analysts to discuss topics related to how clouds are built, marketed, and consumed. Everyone has different needs in the cloud, so we'll debate the topic at hand and at the very least agree to disagree. Our goal is to provide good sound bites about how to manage your bytes in the cloud. And sometimes the best conclusion may simply be that the cloud bites. This episode is all about how asset management can be used to protect critical data. My name is Brian Knutson. I'm the Director of Cloud Market Intelligence for 1111 Systems and will be acting as our moderator for today's discussion. This episode's panel includes a wide variety of asset experiences. Let's start by having each of our panelists quickly introduce themselves with a soundbite of their initial thoughts about what is important to know about protecting data with asset management.
Hey, I'm Lauren Malhoit, the Director of Technical Content at Men & Mice, which is a scale-up DDI company based in Iceland. I think when we're thinking about cloud asset management and the importance of it, if anything, cloud asset management is even more necessary than on-premises because of the cloud cost model that we all know about and the way that engineers will take every opportunity to eat up resources if they can. Having those single sources of truth, having at least a minimal amount of sources of organization, I guess, will help us keep a handle on that cost as well as hopefully help us all design for better use cases in multi-cloud architectures.
Hey, my name is Chris Ray. I've had many hands-on technical roles in the past, and that's often where I find myself. I've worked in large organizations, I've worked in small organizations, started off with the legacy on-premise technology like many of us have, and over the years have transitioned into cloud, maybe even hybrid cloud and legacy together. And what I've been finding is when we talk about asset management in the cloud, really it's the pseudonym for visibility. Because cloud can be a dark or a black hole for a lot of people and organizations. So when we're talking about asset management, really talking about shining light into that darkness and figuring out what is where and what it does.
Vince Wood here, also known as H-Town Vinny. If you're a podcast listener, I have my own podcast called IT Reality. But by day, I spend my time as a disaster recovery engineer for Offsite Data Sync. When it comes to asset management, if you don't know what you have, it's going to be really hard to bring it up when the proverbial you know what hits the fan.
Thank you all for joining me. It should come as no surprise to anyone that systems you don't know about can't be properly secured, just as Vinny said. But yet, companies often struggle with unknown hardware and software assets in their environments. Most obviously, the use of shadow IT. It's not uncommon to find a company that can't properly track their existing assets, and the distributed nature of today's data centers and distributed employees can make this even more difficult. So Vince, can you start by giving us an idea of how asset management data has traditionally been collected and how it is used to secure primarily on-premises environments?
Yeah. So digging back to my days as a sysadmin or systems engineer for a customer, as it were, typically you would focus on what is being brought in the door day one, day two, as a new employee starts, as a new division starts, whatever. That may be hardware, it may be software, it may be licensing, it may be something else altogether. In my experience, it's a very manual process. So you're going to start with what is the thing? How many of it do I have? Who's using it? And then as you go from day one and day two to, say, day 73, how much of that has changed? Has anybody kept up with it along the way? These are a lot of the questions that I remember having to deal with and answer, because if you don't get them right, it doesn't matter what happens between 73 and day 373, you're lost. So sometimes meetings with key individual contributors is a big deal, whether that be a manager somewhere in the org chart or a C-level executive. But documentation is killer. If you don't have that, good luck.
Hey, Vince, I had a question for you. When we're talking about asset management data, can you give me some specific examples of what that is? Just kind of a level set?
Yeah, let's talk about a computer, a single PC, or it could be a server that runs a specific piece of software for an organization. So the first thing you're going to have is you're going to have, what is the computer? Of course, you're going to want to know its serial number. You're going to know warranty period. You're going to want to know what's connected to it, peripherals that were assigned to the end user or the department, things like that. You're going to want to know the software. What is the software? What is supposed to be running on this PC or server versus what is not supposed to be running on that PC or server? I'm sure as a sysadmin, we've all run across that PC where someone has installed iTunes or some other sharing program that I'll just leave kind of vague there. And that stuff doesn't belong in the corporate environment. So you need to know what's there, your hardware, your software. You need to know how is it supposed to communicate. You need to know what name it communicates as. And all of that leads to decisions down the road.
You know, it's so interesting. So back in my early days, I worked as a contractor for the Air Force Institute of Technology. And so one of my jobs was to do asset management and literally like inventory things every month or whatever it was. It was a crazy amount of just inventory being done. And we would literally walk miles around Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, just trying to collect, like you said, serial numbers. And then, of course, through some Active Directory or whatever we were using to collect the software information, we could get that. But we had to get our physical fingers on these devices and then very manually take down the information. We had some scanning that we could do as well. And I'm just curious, when we're thinking of industry, obviously DOD is going to be huge for, or government, I should say, is going to be huge for asset management because they have to be held responsible or accountable for these things. And if something goes missing, you have to go find it. I'm curious, is it as important in other industries that you've seen, Vince? What are your thoughts there?
Well, I worked for a company at one point that was, let's just say, in the energy sector. And that company that I worked for had agreements with large energy companies, names that you would know if you had to go get gasoline. Those companies had very, very strict requirements as to what was allowed to communicate across to their network and vice versa. Also, they had very strict auditing rules that they had to have all their partners comply with. So it wasn't just a matter of business A doesn't want people putting iTunes on their PCs. It was a matter of our customer has said this is not acceptable anywhere on any system that we communicate with. So I don't care if you don't like it, but you got to comply. It's not a government rule. It's a contractual agreement.
To me, it's interesting because I'm hearing two different, there's one problem, but there's two different solutions that come to mind, and they're both kind of legacy focused. So I'd like to hear from Lauren or you, Vince, or Brian, what is the cloud equivalent to these solutions? And the solutions specifically I'm thinking of are CMDB would be the legacy approach to tracking asset data, some sort of platform that you put this data into and it's there forever and you can draw reports on that. And then the other part of this, maybe some sort of endpoint control mechanism that creates like a whitelist or blacklist of allowable programs. Because of the nature of cloud, I don't think CMDB is really the solution moving forward. And trying to apply that endpoint centric solution to like an EC2 instance maybe also doesn't make sense. So what are you seeing now to achieve those, to accomplish those two solutions?
Well, I'll jump in and just say the one thing that I would express to any business that was paying me for my opinion is not to fall into the trap of, oh, it's in the cloud. It's not my problem anymore. Wrong. It's most certainly still your problem. You may have less control over it. As you said, Chris, if it's an EC2 instance, you have limited capabilities as what you can do with it. And that is whatever Amazon would allow you to do. But it doesn't change your responsibility. You still need to know what's there. You still need to control it to whatever degree you can. And as Lauren was saying, you still need to audit it every so often. You still need to have a business policy that aligns with whatever requirements you have to follow.
There are. I did like a quick Google search, right? There are some cloud asset management companies out there. I think probably what needs to happen, which is the most difficult part of doing any sort of multi-cloud design, hybrid cloud, whatever you want to call it. I'm not trying to use buzzwords here, but truly, if you do have things running in multiple cloud instances as well as on-premises, there's just going to be a ton of tools that you have to use, which is the hardest part, to basically simplify operations and give that visibility that Vince was talking about. But visibility is great, except for if you have to look at 30 different solutions to get all of the information to put it into context. And so I think that ultimately it's going to be just a lot of solutions that come together. And however companies choose best to those visible in less than 30 different windows would be how it's going to have to happen, because with the proliferation of software, there's just, I don't think, one way you can do it anymore.
Yeah, and that's making things extremely more complex. And Lauren, you mentioned at the top that in some ways it's even more important as we get into the cloud. But I think a lot of people, you know, maybe we need to take a step back and help people understand why what we used to think of as managing physical assets, making sure things didn't walk away from us. And like you said before, having to hunt things down if we lose sight of them. Now we're talking about non-physical assets. We're talking about software that we don't own, but are more in a rental type approach. I hate using that, but software as a service is oftentimes something that happens on a monthly case. And once we stop paying, we stop having access to it. So can you help us understand where we need to think differently? You've touched on a few things, but maybe start with why it's important to continue to track those things and why it might be even more important.
Yeah, absolutely. I do want to start with kind of the visibility and why that's so important. There are a lot of reasons, one of which being that we're just humans and we want visibility into everything because we like to have that control. And I would say that's probably maybe, I mean, I don't mean to stereotype engineers being one myself or having been one, maybe I should say, but that's amplified, right? Engineers want visibility into everything. So when we're talking about cloud asset management, it is about cloud inventory, right? Taking that inventory, understanding what we have out there, that's absolutely part of it, right? I think Vince was saying, what am I paying for? How much is it going to cost? To Brian, to your question, I may not be able to physically touch the racks or the servers on the racks, right? I can't really touch the electricity that comes into my house either, but I still have to pay for it. And I can regulate it to some degree, right? To control costs too. When we kind of go back to asset management then, as compared to even utilities or like electricity or something, I think it's even more important because now we have teams of people not only using the resources, but deploying the resources. And like with everything, documentation or asset management is very important, but also it's probably the least prioritized part of the job. So again, going back to that cost model, though, we need to understand what's going to be out there. What's in test, what's in dev, what's in prod, because test and dev still cost money in the cloud. We may not have to deal with things like depreciation models anymore, right? I don't know if people are even still doing that on premises, but probably we don't have to deal with things like that in the cloud, but we still have to pay for the resources. And so therefore we need to understand what's out there. Kind of going beyond though, inventory and just the cost control, we have to look at why we need the resources and if we even need those resources. I'm sure we could get into a whole debate. And I'm sure you already have had this podcast of designing applications, designing workloads for the cloud, and not just lift and shifting our on-premises apps to the cloud. So we really have to kind of take a look at that and we can't make those informed decisions if we don't know what we're working with. And one of the hardest parts of any job, I think, is not just giving everyone visibility, but providing the context. Without the context, it doesn't mean much. And asset management in the cloud can't just be a list of things that we use and their IP addresses and the software version. It has to provide that context to be useful for things like if we talk about automation and security as well. So then especially when automation and security come into play, are people just onboarding services in an automated way? And is that all being documented and hardened and protected? How would we know, or at least how would we easily know without asset management?
So we're talking asset management, but we also have a focus here on security. This ties directly into my day in, day out professional job. And that would be, not only do you need to know what the asset is, what this name, this unique identifier is, but you also need to know what its activity and capabilities are. And you're going to want to know from the get-go what is expected as far as how this thing is going to communicate, where it's going to communicate, and what it's supposed to communicate. But you need to know that not only for securing your production environment, but also the cloud environment, because you don't want to do an any rule on a firewall. If you haven't seen what that can do, please go do that in your lab, not on a production system. But what I like to tell people is that if you know how insert application here is supposed to communicate in your environment, what I suggest you do is go run that application in any other environment that you don't control. Because quite often I find that people will have put in configurations in their own production environment where they have full control that allows things to operate in a certain way. When they take that asset, whether it be a server, a container, a application code, whatever it is, and they move it to someone else's environment, all of a sudden it does something different because, oh yeah, 6-7 months ago, you put in a firewall config that allows it to do what it's supposed to or blocks it from doing other things, whatever the case may be. And now that it's not in your environment, it's doing different things or it's behaving differently. And to expand upon that one more time, what happens when work from home enters the picture? What happens when you've got an employee that takes an asset to another network where there are, say, fewer controls? Does it still function as you expect? Is it still gated the way that you want it to be?
Going back, Vince, yeah, I totally agree with endpoints too, especially work from home or work from wherever. But kind of taking it back further to where you were talking about knowing how things communicate, what they're communicating, and maybe who they're communicating with, is there now a much more blurred line between asset management and application dependency mapping? Are those becoming the same, or should they become the same solution or part of the same solution? Because it does come back to design, design for security, design for automation. And if we don't know which solutions these applications are communicating with or internally within an application, how are they communicating? How are we going to design for the best use cases?
I think the appropriate answer here is the hated "it depends" answer.
I was just going to say, Lauren, you bring up a good point, because I'm thinking in my head, historically, when I've worked somewhere that it was on-prem, exclusively on-prem, there was the tracking of the asset. There was the, is it in the rack that we think it's in? Is it in taking up 2U or is it 4U, or we added more devices? But then there was also, okay, what's running on that server? What applications or what databases? And then kind of like you were saying, what are the relationships that it has with other applications and services in our environment? And what is scary is often those relationships are tracked in somebody's head, poorly documented, not in a CMDB. And then they leave the organization when that person leaves the organization. And so that's a practice and a habit that's legacy and on-premise focused, and hopefully it stays there. But that problem still exists in the cloud. Even if you lift and shift your monolithic application and put it into Amazon or Azure or whatever you want, you've still got to map those out. But now you're very much less concerned about that physical location. You don't care what rack it's in or how many U it's taking up or what its power consumption is and its output into your environmental. You're focusing more, like you're saying, on its relationships to other applications. And I think there's probably an argument to be made there that that's going to play a much larger role, or it is playing a much larger role than legacy asset management.
And I can't stress enough that if you don't know these things that we're talking about, all the different aspects of, let's just call it a workload, when the proverbial, you know what, hits the fan, you're going to be miserable as a sysadmin because you're going to be chasing down 25 rabbits instead of two.
And at the same time, shrapnel flying all over the place, because it usually happens in the most dire circumstances.
Yeah, and you'll have a C-level executive going, are we up yet? Are we up yet? Are we up yet? Is it working?
Yep. Yeah, anyone who hasn't dealt with an incident like that is probably relatively new to this industry. So further complicating all of this that we're talking about with the variability, trying to make sure that we have proper eyesight on the things that matter, we're moving into a cloud space where we start talking more of the true cloud-native type solutions. They tend to be very temporary. Whether we're talking about containers or even legacy virtual machines, and a dev test was mentioned, disaster recovery was mentioned, those all are assets we need to track. We have to make sure that we're properly protecting and securing, but they're ephemeral. They may be here one day and gone the next. So Chris, should those temporary assets be tracked and protected in the same way we would our physical on-premises assets or our always on cloud assets?
There's many layers to this answer, because, and I'm guilty of this, I'm sure we're all guilty of this. When we say cloud, we're kind of just throwing a blanket over a bunch of different models of cloud, infrastructure, platform, software as a service. When we say, what are temporary assets in the cloud? I like to expand the scope of the discussion a little bit beyond containers and serverless and say, like you just said, maybe virtual machines as well, because those can be spun up and destroyed so easily. But then let's also take it up the next layer to that shared responsibility model, SaaS, where you're shifting a lot of the responsibility to the provider. There's assets that are created in SaaS applications like a HubSpot or like a Salesforce, records that are created in there. In a lot of organizations, they don't have visibility into who's doing what. They rely exclusively on the logging capability provided by that solution. So kind of taking a step back now that we've established scope of when we're talking about cloud assets and their ephemeral or temporary nature, there's a few things you have to worry about here. One, if we're talking about infrastructure, yeah, there's those containers and serverless functions that run as needed and maybe are destroyed. And you're worried about maintaining the integrity of their configurations or their manifest files and things like that. But then you have the platforms and you're focusing more on maybe database as a service or virtual machines. And you're still concerned about the manifest files, but now you're also concerned, kind of like Lauren was mentioning, the relationships to each other, because that's going to be critical when that stuff hits the fan moment. And then taking it up another level to the SaaS side of things, tracking role-based access is going to be so important, because those are the people who are going to be creating these objects, which kind of can be an asset in certain SaaS applications. Rolling it up, how do you achieve visibility into these things, or how do you track these assets? There's one camp that says maybe you need a CASB, Cloud Access Service Broker. There's another camp that's going to say, hey, if it's infrastructure and it's platform, you probably want to use a cloud security posture management solution or a CSPM to do that.
It feels like consistency is really key when, whether we're talking about SaaS or infrastructure as a service, or whether we're talking about on-premises traditional infrastructure. If we're not doing the same RBAC policies, the same asset management policies, that's the recipe for disaster. And that's when, obviously, it's very complicated and difficult to do. And when we talk about Quicken or we talk about HubSpot, is the IT team even involved in that, right? I think as with everything, it comes down to process and policy more so than it does even the technology.
Yeah, I love that note about the data on a SaaS platform is still super critical. You picked the perfect example too, with Salesforce.com, because that is the lifeblood of so many organizations. I know that a lot of the data I utilize day in and day out, helping to analyze our market, how we fit in the market, what the market's doing around us, is coming from Salesforce, because that is the conduit with which sales can communicate to me what they're seeing. Of course, Google and other tools are useful for me in those regards, but if I didn't have access to that data, if we lost that data, we'd be sunk. And if we're not properly tracking its existence and who has access, and again, I'm loving this point about the intention of the assets is important to track. If we're not paying attention to that, we'd be pretty sunk.
Right. And there's kind of diving a little deeper into the SaaS side of this, because I will talk all day about infrastructure and platform as a service, but I have neglected for a long time the SaaS side of data protection. And it's becoming more and more important. When you create an asset in a SaaS application, like a profile for a customer in Salesforce, you have to immediately start asking questions. Is my organization aware of this? Is there some sort of report that says, hey, this account rep has created a new account and this is where it's at? If there's not that level of tracking, then you're lacking visibility. It's a big black hole. But then also, now that you've created this sensitive asset in a cloud, who has access to it? Obviously, your organization, the person who created it. Do you have appropriate role-based access control set up? And then taking it a step further, does the vendor, the creator of that SaaS solution, do they have access to that data for troubleshooting purposes? Can you control that access? So it's shifting. You can kind of see legacy, you would never have these questions. You'd be like, it's in my rack. I know who has keycard access to the data center. It's logged. We have cameras. We can see. I know who has access to the applications. They need a VPN to get in. When you have that same capability, but in a SaaS, anybody can access it. You have no visibility into the physical nature of it. And you can only hope that your SaaS provider has considered the ability to disable access to your data if needed.
One thing, there's two points here that we're hitting here. One is perimeter firewall versus application firewall. The other is protecting the assets that you don't control the platform of, whether it be Salesforce or some other software as a service. If you go look in the security news bucket, you'll see regularly such and such company got hacked and their data was taken offline. And it's not that they killed the infrastructure, the hacker didn't. They simply removed the ability for that business to utilize that data. That can have a much bigger impact than just frying a server, just to use a simple example.
Yeah, and that's a great point.
If you, the owner of that data, don't take precautions to make sure that not only do you have access to the data, but do you know what's going on with it? I live in the DR world, so I'm going to keep going back there. But if you don't know how it was set up and who logged in and did what, when someone ultimately ransomwares you, you're screwed. And I've been on both sides of the equation, the part provider as well as the customer side. And now that I'm on the provider side or partner side, whichever word you want to use, I can empathize with someone who gets ransomware, but if you didn't take precaution, I don't really feel too bad for you. You need to do the right thing and protect things across the entire stack.
Yep. And across the entire stack. Let's take that idea and now shift the discussion we're having down to the infrastructure layer. How common is it that your engineering team, your DevOps team, will be in a call and they'll be given a mandate or even just sort of a question from senior leadership and say, you know, we've heard of this service in our cloud provider. Could it benefit us somehow if we were to use it? And then a member or a few members of the team will go into the cloud service and start playing with this new service. They'll spin it up, they'll leave it running, they'll forget about it. And then you get a vulnerability report on it months later and you're like, no, that's not right. We don't even use that service. It's false positive. Oh, wait, never mind. We did play around with it a while ago. So getting back to that, enhancing your visibility with temporary assets, it's container, it's serverless functions like Lambda and AWS. But then it's also just the nature of cloud, how it's kind of democratized all these different services that you would normally need a very specific skill set to create and spin up and make available on the internet. Now you can click a button sometimes and that very specific service is just kind of hanging out there. And maybe it doesn't have any sensitive data in it, but it's going to be a surprise to the security team at some point.
Well, tying asset management and security and the state of things altogether, if you have developers, are they using a Bitbucket, a GitHub, some repository X where they're putting code? Is that being protected? Is that being tracked? Because there may be very, very valuable lines of code there. And ask SolarWinds what happens when that underlying code gets messed with. Or shared responsibility model, that O365, M365, 365 something product that many customers are moving to because I don't have to manage it anymore. Wrong. Because every time someone sends an email, emails a customer, creates a contact, all that kind of stuff, you probably want that data. And you probably want to make sure that it's not, oh, I don't know, exfiltrated when an employee leaves the company. You probably want to make sure that the sales team has access to all that. Maybe there's a customer contact that didn't get loaded into the system of record, those kind of things. Just because someone else is running the infrastructure for you doesn't mean you don't need to track what's inside it and make sure that it's protected and secured from outsiders.
Yeah, absolutely. And the technology has definitely got some challenges, which we've highlighted, which is that there's not a lot of consistency from one platform to the next, one SaaS provider to the next, that allows a lot of us that lived in the virtualization space got really spoiled with Veeam. Being able to touch into the VMware environment, be able to hit everything and be able to pull it back. And now the technologies are so disparate when we start looking at cloud technologies that, yeah, Veeam will back up your 365 and they've announced that they'll be able to back up Salesforce soon, but there's infinite number of other cloud platforms that are still left unprotected.
And I'll add one more thing here, Brian, before we wrap this up. And that is, with everything we've talked about, please, 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 if you're not at a provider, if you're a customer or individual organization listening to this, please break down the silos between the IT department and all the other departments, because we're talking about asset management, we're talking about security, and without saying it, we're actually also talking about data protection. But if you don't have that open line of communication with all the other departments in the business, because, oh, those are just IT people, they only want to tell you no. If you don't have that conversation, that communication, you just made your job that much harder.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And with so much of cloud and security, that is kind of a default behavior, is tearing down those silos, because none of what goes on in the cloud, none of what goes on in security, asset management plays into both of those very heavily, can be accomplished appropriately if all the teams aren't working together, especially in light of how easy it is to spin things up, like Chris said. So yeah, traditionally we've done asset management very manual, which means that the data drift happens very easily if you're not consistently going back to that. Similar parallels when it comes to vulnerability management. If we don't stay on top of things, we start building up a lot of debt, and particularly with asset management, it's really hard to pull back out of that. So having that documented is going to be key. How to document it is still somewhat challenging. There's a lot of different ways to do it. Some of the old tools aren't really going to be flexible enough to deal with how we're doing things in the cloud, and may still require a lot of manual efforts and tracking to actually do it right. And it is important to do it right, even in the cloud, because that visibility gives you the ability to really be able to see what you're doing in the cloud, to control those assets, to protect those assets, both on the front end to keep people out of that data, but also on the back end to be able to recover that data, to be able to have backups and know that if something goes down, you'll be able to do it. Because we all know that cloud is not 100%. It's not always going to be there. There's a lot of things that benefit us from availability in the cloud, but it's not always going to be there. So you got to know how you're going to be able to get to your data should something go wrong. And with everything that's so highly variable in the cloud, knowing how they connect, what they do with each other, what the purpose of those things in the cloud is more important than even it used to be when we were doing on-premises. Because a lot of blurring of lines between asset management and app dependency mapping, because it's the purpose of an asset in the cloud is as important as knowing that you have it in the first place. Because over time, things can drift and things can change, and you may end up having a vulnerability out there from a security perspective that you don't need to have. And if you knew that the purpose of this thing was limited, you could then either tighten it down or potentially just completely eliminate it. And as we look at more of the SaaS type models, the more of the platform type models, it's important to think about the entire stack with asset management. Again, we may have gotten a little complacent on premises saying, we've got a SQL server, a physical SQL server over there, and as long as we protect that and everything that's implied by that, we're good. But data doesn't live like that. It doesn't live in a monolith anymore. So we need to make sure that we're focusing on what are the permanent pieces? What are the ephemeral pieces that we need to keep track of? And what are the components that we need in order to recreate those? From a Kubernetes perspective, for example, we've got YAML files that we need to track. We may not care about the individual compute pieces, but we care about the configuration with which to spin it up. And throughout all this, we need to focus on that protection and recovery. And all of this really ties back to where we started, which is you can't secure, you can't detect what's inappropriate behavior within the environment unless you know all these pieces. So tear down those silos, talk to everyone else in the organization, and find a way to track not only what you have from a traditional asset software perspective, but the data, the interactions, who has access, why they have access, what needs to talk to what needs to be tracked as well. So very complex space. Cloud is not making it much easier, but hopefully this is an area where highlighting, shining some light into the dark, as was said earlier, can help you to better improve security out there. But that's a lot. So we'll leave it at that. Thank you to Vince, Lauren, and Chris for a great conversation. Also, thanks to 1111 for making this podcast possible. Please check out the episode notes, panelist contact information, further information on this topic, and all the other episodes at cloudbytes.cloud. You can also find our episodes on your favorite podcast apps. And if you found this content useful, we'd appreciate you sharing with your friends and colleagues and rating us on your favorite podcast platforms. Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Cloud Bytes podcast.